Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 17. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is a well-known verse. Those who know it may chant after me. Srinvatang Swakata Krishna.
Srinvatang Swakata Krishna.
Punya Shravana Kirtanaha.
Punya Shravana Kirtanaha.
Hridyantastho Hyabhadrani.
Hridyantastho Hyabhadrani.
Vidhunoti Suhrit Satam.
Vidhunoti Suhrit Satam.
Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear His messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Purport. Messages of the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, are none different from Him. Whenever, therefore, offenseless hearing and glorification of God are undertaken, it is to be understood that Lord Krishna is present there in the form of transcendental sound, which is so powerful, which is as powerful as the Lord personally. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Shikshashtaka, declares clearly that the holy name of the Lord has all the potencies of the Lord, and that He has endowed His innumerable names with the same potency. There is no rigid fixture of time, and anyone can chant the holy name with attention and reverence at his convenience. The Lord is so kind to us that He can be present before us personally in the form of transcendental sound, but unfortunately we have no taste for hearing and glorifying the Lord's name and activities. We have already discussed developing a taste for hearing and chanting the holy sound. It is done through the medium of service to the pure devotee of the Lord. The Lord is reciprocally respondent to His devotees. When He sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord and has thus become eager to hear about Him, the Lord acts from within the devotee in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to Him. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into His kingdom than we can desire. Most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. Only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. One cannot enter the kingdom of God unless one is perfectly cleared of all sins. The material sins are products of our desire to lord it over material nature. It is very difficult to get rid of such desires. Women and wealth are very difficult problems for the devotee making progress on the path back to Godhead. Many stalwarts in the devotional line fell victim to these allurements and thus retreated from the path of liberation. But when one is helped by the Lord Himself, the whole process becomes as easy as anything by the divine grace of the Lord. To become restless in the contact of women and wealth is not an astonishment, because every living being is associated with such things from remote time, practically immemorial, and it takes time to recover from this foreign nature. But if one is engaged in hearing the glories of the Lord, gradually he realizes Hare Krishna. His real position. By the grace of God, such a devotee gets sufficient strength to defend himself from the state of disturbances, and gradually all disturbing elements are eliminated from his mind. Om Gyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shatchi Putra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasyaga Jamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaram Aho Radhika Matavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurun Tannatosmi Vandeham Sri Guru Shriyataf Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavangscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagarna Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhandita Sra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This well-known verse is a recommendation for hearing about Krishna. There are many such recommendations within the Bhagavatam and glorifications of the process of hearing about Krishna. In this verse, specifically, it is stated that one who hears about Krishna is helped by Krishna, inasmuch as Krishna, who is antastha, he hridyantastha, he is situated within the heart of every living being. He cleanses the inauspicious things from within the heart, because he is the very best friend of the sincere devotee. So it is a recommendation to hear. And within the Vaishnava culture of India, or we may say more broadly the bhakti culture, because bhakti within the Hindu cultural context is often understood to be broader than strictly Vaishnavism. It's just so we have Guru Bhakti and Shiva Bhakti. Actually, bhakti should, that means specifically for Krishna, but within Hinduism, many of the words, the meanings get altered. And so hearing, the process of hearing from the Puranas about Krishna and his avatars is very much part of the culture. Even Mayavadis, they often, those whose philosophical conclusion is that there is ultimately no one supreme, or that Krishna is a special person, but you can also be Krishna, or you also are Krishna, some absurd ideas, and actually very completely anti-devotional ideas. They often like to speak on Krishna, and in a very, some of them are very expert in doing in what appears to be a very devotional way, but it's not at all devotional. It's very sinful. But all these speakers, just the day, 2 days after I arrived back in India, in a few days, I'm scheduled to go to Govardhan, the town of Govardhan, which is, of course, a great place of pilgrimage, Vaishnava pilgrimage. And regularly in Govardhan, we see many posters advertising upcoming or ongoing kathas. Katha means, and in Vrindavan, on the road into Vrindavan, you'll see so many kathas advertised by various brands of Vaishnavas, maybe Vaishnavas, and maybe not Vaishnavas also. But we know that the kind of katha they speak, generally is Bhagavad katha, speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam in Vrindavan and Govardhan. And they'll speak from Bhagavatam, but they won't, there are certain verses they won't speak. Just like, for instance, a few days ago on Radhashtami, I was in Miami and speaking on the transcendent nature of the relationship between Radha and Krishna, I quoted several times a verse from Bhagavatam that Srila Prabhupada often quoted, Pungsastriya mithuni bhavametam tayar aho hridaya grantimahu. What's next? Atah griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya moho yamaham mameti. To contrast the completely pure the nature of the relationship between Radha and Krishna, I contrasted that. It should not at all be mistaken for the mundane attraction between male and female, which is the very basis of material existence, which forms a hard knot of attachment within the heart that causes one to become progressively attached to home, wife, wealth, children, relatives, money, and in this way this increases one's illusion in the material world in terms of I, me, and mine. A godbrother of mine, who was present in that lecture, told me afterwards that he hadn't, in that temple, which he's been regularly attending for the last 20 years, he hadn't heard that verse quoted. So the professional speakers on Bhagavatam, and it seems maybe at least in ISKCON Miami, and maybe other places also, they don't discuss such topics. They quote, they like to discuss the topics from Bhagavatam that are very pleasing. And why not? Because it states here that by hearing about Krishna, the heart is cleansed. But practically speaking, then the question may come, then why, you know, such a nice verse, and Prabhupada, he could have spoken about the nectar of hearing about Krishna. But he brings in all this stuff about women and wealth, how they bind attraction to that, causes fall down. And why discuss it? It's not there in the purport at all. In the verse itself, there's nothing about women and wealth. So why bring in all this nasty stuff? Why not concentrate on the positive things? And why myself, also having chosen this verse to speak on, why am I talking about that? I could have spoken about the first part of the purport, in which Srila Prabhupada speaks about the holy name of Krishna. Yeah, kindly off your cell phone, to use English, Indian English, or put it in silent mode. Why Srila Prabhupada talks about the glories of the holy name and everyone in any condition can share. So why bring up this? And why in Srila Prabhupada's books again and again we see such topics? Why Prabhupada brings this in? Well, the point is there in this verse, abhadra, abhadrani. Abhadra means that which is inauspicious. Srila Prabhupada translates this, it could be translated in many ways, but Srila Prabhupada translates this as the desire to enjoy matter, abhadra. It's a general term which means, can be translated as inauspicious, but Srila Prabhupada specifically, what is inauspicious? He gives a more precise definition of that, is the desire to enjoy matter. And that takes many forms, many, many forms. That hoya mayar das kari nana obhilash. When one becomes a servant of maya, then one has many, many desires. But they are often summarized in, material desires are often summarized in two words, kanaka kamini, which means gold and women, particularly women seen as instigators or exciters or objects of material desire, of material enjoyment. So these are, you know, very touchy topics, especially when we talk about women in the Association of Women. And these topics are to be discussed, and women are not banned from hearing such things. What will they think of such things? Well, one has to, one, and men also, they may think, well, why this misogyny, this anti-women? But such thoughts, they also fall in the category of abhadra. To think that the Bhagavatam, which is the literary manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, fosters some hatred or improper attitude, that is also a wrong understanding. This attachment to the material world binds us in the material world. That all the attachments, they're obstacles to our coming out of it and becoming attached to Krishna. So here it says, the verse says that by hearing the messages of Krishna, that we become purified. So why not just hear about the pastimes of Krishna? But within the messages of Krishna, there are all these topics are discussed. So we can't edit that out. Part of the purifying process is hearing about what the inauspicious things within our heart are. And actually that is required, because we see that persons who attend such functions as these katas, professional katas, they are very pious people, no doubt, and they hear about Krishna, but they don't hear these parts about how we have to go beyond material attachments, and therefore they don't become free. We see they don't become free from material attachments. They have bhakti, but it is the kind of bhakti that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described. It's comparable to getting into a boat at night, rowing all night, expecting to reach your destination, and in the morning seeing that you're at the same place despite so much hard work, because you never untied the boat from its mooring. So you're doing bhakti, but you're not going anywhere. And that is called Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. You did work, that's all. That's all you can. Well, I worked hard all night, the boatman may say. Where's my payment? You should pay me. Well, we didn't go anywhere, but I worked hard all night. But he doesn't get paid, because it's just all he can say is that I worked hard all night, and that's as far as it goes. Because what is that? Dharmasva nushtita pungsang vishvaksena katasu yaha notpadiyad yadi ratim shrama eva hi kevalam. If one doesn't get a taste for hearing about Krishna, then even if one is very pious, then it's just you're doing your duty, working hard, but that's all. So you may say, well, we do have taste for Krishna. Otherwise, why are you hearing about Krishna? Otherwise, why are we going to all these katas? But then you can't chop Krishna. I like Krishna's smile, but I don't like his arm, so chop off the arm. That's not a good proposal, is it? There's the chakra that may come, cut off my head. So cut off the arm. So if we like to select from Bhagavatam, we will hear, we like the nice things, but we don't like the nasty things, then that is actually offensive. And it's not sincere. This word is given here, satam. Satam prasangam amavirya samvita. We're supposed to hear the Bhagavatam in the association of satam, which Srila Prabhupada translates as sincere, serious. Those who are actually fully interested in sat, that which is true, pure, real, they must be uninterested in asat, You can't have Sat and Asat. You can't be a pure devotee and a materialist also. So one should clearly understand what is the difference between Sat and Asat, and Krishna has very kindly manifested himself as the Srimad Bhagavatam to help us understand what is Sat and Asat. And if we don't like to hear that, that means that actually we're not Sat, we're not really interested in serving Krishna. We have the pious propensity to enjoy hearing about the pastimes of Krishna, but not the fully sincere propensity to become fully free from all material contamination. So, here it is stated that wealth, women and wealth, these are obstacles. Attachment to them are obstacles on the path of self-realization, which is why, actually, that's well known in Hindu culture, or at least used to be, until all these opportunistic so-called gurus took over or became prominent on the scene. On this, but that was well understood, and that's why people often think that, well, to make spiritual advancement, you have to take sannyas. That's actually Shankaracharya's program, that real advancement, you don't really make any advancement, any real spiritual advancement, unless you take sannyas. Spiritual life starts with taking sannyas. And according to their understanding, dandagrahena matrena naro narayana pavit. Sounds very lofty, doesn't it? It's completely nonsense. It means that simply by accepting the danda, the stick of a sannyasi, a man, Nara, becomes Narayana. Dandagrahena matrena naro narayana narayana bhavit. Srila Prabhupada would say, kick them in the face with boots. For such a rascal idea. So that idea is, but actually much of what Shankara says is correct also. Srila Prabhupada stated that up to the point of liberation, the Mayavadi philosophy and that of the Vaishnavas is the same. Culturally, it's largely the same. And the philosophy is the same. What is the philosophy? That, well, we have to accept Veda, especially Shruti Pramana. The Mayavadis much emphasize on Shruti. Shruti, the original Vedas. And that this material world is miserable. We have to come out of that. We have to be liberated. But what is the nature of liberation? That's where the Mayavadis and the Vaishnavas divide, and a very serious division. Otherwise, on that point, there are many good writings, many good things that Shankara and his followers say about the nature of this material world, how it is miserable, and many points about the nature of sadhus and gurus, and it's the same culture. So this Kanaka Kamini, that both Vaishnavas and Mayavadis, they all accept these are the attachment to that is women, well, wealth, gold specifically, and women, attachment to that is the cause of binding in this material world. So then, if Vaishnavas agree on that also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, what is that? Nishkinchanasya bhagavad bhajano mukhasya parang param jigamesha bhavasagarasya. What is the next line? Ata yoshitam, ata vishayanam yoshitam cha ha hanta hanta. Visha bhakshanato piya sadhu. that for one who is seriously aspiring to cross over the ocean of birth and death, and particularly one who is in the renounced order of life, to see a materialist, as Srila Prabhupada sometimes translates this, as a pounds, shillings, and pence man. to see one who is interested in material enjoyment, or one who is attached to women, it is worse than drinking poison. So for us, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated this, that when one of his associates, Haridas, Chota Haridas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that this Haridas, although he was a renunciant, he had harbored, even briefly in his mind, some attraction for women. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Get out. Don't remain with me." And he wouldn't let him come back. And after 1 year, Haridas drowned himself. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got the news. He said, "Very good. Swakarma phala bhuk puman." He actually said that people, they get the results of their activities. Extremely strict. The Supreme Lord, who is so merciful, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was so strict on this point. Another time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard the singing of Gita Govinda, so nicely sung that he was running to embrace the singer because he thought it so nicely sung, and he was running through the thorn bushes. He didn't notice how he was so entranced by hearing that the thorn bushes were ripping his skin, but his servant Govinda could understand that this was being sung by a woman, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his ecstasy, without understanding what he was doing, was going to go and embrace a woman. So Govinda somehow came behind him, and he must have also had his body ripped by the thorn bushes, and he grabbed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, "It's a woman." And with the word woman, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to external consciousness and embraced Govinda and said, "Govinda, you've saved my life." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's very, very strict on this point. So then we may consider that, well, what hope is there for householders? Because they have to deal with money and women. That's the very meaning of a householder, grihastha, is to have a wife. And when there's a wife, ato griha kshetra, even if one's a Vaishnava, then there is consideration of home, money, children, relatives, and with that comes the whole thing, social prestige, and the anxiety of bringing money. A householder cannot but think of money. He has to, in the modern age especially. If you don't, then you're in a lot of trouble. You have to be, and it's not that easy to get. As the saying goes, money doesn't grow on trees. Only in dreamland. So what hope is there? But then we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had so many intimate disciples who were grihasthas, including, actually it's stated there were the three Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's most intimate associates. Who are they? Rupa Raghunath? It's the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They're all Tyaktva Turna Mashesh Amanda Rapati Shraining Sada Tucha. They left their aristocratic society. They were married, at least Rup Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath. He was ordered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not to marry. Rup Sanatan, they were married. They left everything. They left the society, but the three and a half most intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are stated to be Swarup Damodar, who is a renunciant, Ramananda Rai, who was married, Shiki Mahiti was married, and the half is Madhavi Devi. So I may say, why half? I presume because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being sannyasi, that even though Madhavi Devi was elderly and highly renounced, there's some restrictions in mixing like that. So, Grihastas are there. Srila Prabhupada often pointed out that in the 12 Mahajans of the 12 great authorities on all, at least we can say the 12 authorities who are listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then, of course, there are so many more, but of the 12 who are listed, who are they? Swayambhu means Brahma, he's married. Narada is a brahmachari. So one. And then Shambhu, Lord Shiva, is married, although he's so renounced also. Shambhu. Kumara, the Kumara there. So it's two, they're not married. Kumara, Kapila, brahmachari, Manu, married. Prahlada, married. Janaka, married. Bhishma, is he married? Of course not. then Bali, married. Vyasaki, so it's, and Vaya means myself, Yamaraj, so it's 7 to 5, 7 grihastas. But it's not that one is considered, it's not that one, that the renunciants are considered better authorities than the non-renunciants. On that level, there's no difference whatsoever. So how is it that they can be in contact with women and wealth and still be great devotees? Because they're great devotees. The bhakti overrules that. But, as Srila Prabhupada says here, wealth and association with women is can cause fall down, and it's the allurement to that. Srila Prabhupada uses this word, allurement, that can cause one to fall. And money, the desire for money, the bewilderment that can come from association with money can be very dangerous. With money comes the opportunity for material enjoyment. It comes prestige. There comes a sense of power or a sense of, now I can do what I like. I have money, I can do. I can go where I like, do what I like, buy what I like. So it is intoxicating. The egoistic, it intoxicates the ego if one has much money. And even if one has a little money, again, how to spend it. The idea, it's something, it's my money that can be used to further my desires. So the desire for money and to actually have it is very dangerous. Women, desire for woman, of course, that term is used, kamini, that means one who excites material desire. For a woman also, although that's generally recommended that the woman should be attached to the man, especially if he's a devotee, that's very good for her spiritual advancement. But this, whatever way, man to woman, woman to man, if the attachment is material, that means if Krishna is not clearly in the center, if one thinks that a woman is for my enjoyment, or if a woman thinks a man is for my enjoyment, or to facilitate my enjoyment, well, that's not Krishna consciousness. And that is the cause of fall down. So, these are very dangerous. This should be discussed. Why are we, see now for the last, during this lecture, why don't I talk more about Krishna? You may say, why not talk about Krishna? Why talk about women and wealth in such disparaging terms? Why not just hear about Krishna? And that will purify us, that's what's stated. But Krishna himself, as Srimad Bhagavatam, and as Shastra, and through the devotees, he makes these points also. So we require to hear and understand these points. And it's, you may say, well, I'm a sannyasi coming in here and whipping the householders with these nasty words, but I also need to hear it. I also have to consider it. All of us have to. If we don't hear and consider these points, then it's quite likely that we're going to be rowing the tied up boat. How we get free from attachment, it's not only the positive side of becoming attached to Krishna, but there's some cutting is needed, cutting the attachment that is required, that very verse is there, tato du sangamutsrija satsu sajeta buddhiman shanta evasya chindanti manovya sangam uktibihi. Krishna says to Uddhava that tataha, thereafter, or having, which refers to the previous verses, which states about the how one should understand how material existence is simply full of suffering. Therefore, one should give up bad association. Do sangha utsricha. And again, satsu, one who is sat, one who is very sincere and serious and wants to come to the actual position, who is actually intelligent, he should associate with devotees, with saintly persons, who, what will they do? First of all, Krishna says, they will cut the attachments of our mind, our mental attachments, by their words. So, where will we hear this? Billy Graham's greatest person who ever lived in Charlotte, is it? The Wright brothers, they were also here. Right? So you have two great personalities. Two Wright brothers and one Billy Graham. Who else? Any other great personalities from Charlotte?
Praveen Govinda.
Jai! He's not from Charlotte. He's from... Where are you from?
Ajmer, Rajasthan.
And much traveled here and there. Surat, I first in Surat, then Indonesia, and now Charlotte. So, does Billy Graham say these things, that you have to cut your attachment to women and money? I don't think so. Most of these Christian preachers, they actually say that if God answers prayers, so you can go to God and pray, give me lots of money. That's considered very proper and respectable, especially within much of the Protestant tradition. Isn't it? In the Protestant ethic, which is what's called the Protestant ethic, which is quite opposite to how Jesus lived and what he taught. He said, you cannot love God and love mammon. Mammon means material enjoyment. Their idea is that, well, the sign of God's grace on you is that you have lots of money. So, you should be good and honest and work hard and pray to God and God will give you lots of money. And if you're poor, that means you're not a good person. Good means to have money. So they don't preach like that. They don't preach like that. Who preaches like that, to give up attachment to material life? These modern gurus in Hinduism, they don't. They have all these personality development seminars which you have to pay. It used to be 2,000 rupees. I think it's more now. You know, these Sri Sri and all these. He's the most successful rascal of the modern age. He got his act down, how to cheat people. Little bhajan, little quote from the Upanishads, how to overcome stress and all this kind of thing. And people love it. And they give him tons of money and he's doing great. The only thing is, he's going to hell. And so is everyone who follows him. So, he doesn't teach that. And then you have the hugging guru, and she doesn't tell you to give up material attachments. Who speaks like this at all? Well, Prabhupada speaks like this. He teaches us about Krishna, and he also teaches us that we have to give up. We can't get Krishna if we have attachments to the material world. Today is the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he gave many songs with this teaching also. Kam krodh lobh moha madadi abhishta eshab na chere kise pabe Radha Krishna. Puts the whole thing about attaining to Radha and Krishna. He says that as long as we are absorbed in lust, anger, greed, attachment, envy, then as long as we do not give this up, as long as we don't kick this out, then how can we attain to Radha and Krishna? Is it possible? It's not possible. So, this should be considered by all devotees. And those in household life, they should also, I mean, it applies to everyone, because we all have to go back to Godhead, right? It's not that they're not, they're in many ways there are different rules for grihasthas and for sannyasis. But at the end result is supposed to be the same. Or the end result has to be the same if we're going to be going back to Godhead. That means to have full attachment to Krishna, which that means to have no attachment to this material world. So within family life, Vaishnava family life, there's women, man and woman together, children, comfort, they're not required, they may do, but they're not required to live an austere life as sannyasis do, although as it happens in the modern world, because householders, they're very kindly, or they have the pious householders have the spirit of service to sannyasis. So often sannyasis, they live more comfortably than grihasthas, although they shouldn't make arrangements for themselves to do so. Nor should they be very eager to accept arrangements. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also demonstrated that they shouldn't be very eager to accept facilities for their own personal comfort. Although again, they may do specifically for the sake of preaching. We see that Srila Prabhupada, he had very nice quarters in many places, in London, in Melbourne, in Los Angeles, especially in London, he would, and Melbourne also, the very nice quarters, and the devotees would invite prominent people of the materialistic society to come and meet Srila Prabhupada. If they brought him to, if Prabhupada was in some ramshackle hut, they wouldn't be much inclined to come, but they were inclined to come. And then Prabhupada would preach to them. He didn't just chit-chat with them. He preached to them. So, anyway, the point is, everyone has to become free from material attachments and fully attached to Krishna. So that is the ultimate goal. So householders, they have to consider these points also. These words may appear to be very harsh, but life in the material world is very harsh. And the illusion is to think that life in the material world is very nice. And that is the illusion that binds us in the world. And that can also, sannyasis can also fall victim of that. They may think, well, now so many people are worshipping me and giving me money, and so, yes, no, I'm a success. So actually everything is very nice here. I have a very nice ashram. Everything is very peaceful. Actually, it's difficult to find any peaceful ashram anywhere, because in Kali Yuga and in any, in ISKCON or anywhere else, it's either a war against Maya, or Maya already completely took over. But if there's a war against Maya, it means it's not peaceful also. And if Maya completely took over, it may be peaceful, but uselessly peaceful. Dangerously peaceful. So, everyone should consider this. Therefore, Varnashram, there is Grihastha Ashram, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. One should not remain attached to the comfort of home life forever. One who is desiring to go back to Godhead, householders should know also that I shouldn't remain attached to this. That doesn't mean that everyone, again, doesn't mean that everyone has to take sannyas. It may be that in Vanaprastha life, or as soon as the children are grown up and able to look after themselves, then one can, husband and wife can together do full-time service in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean they have to separate necessarily, as Vanaprasthas, they can serve Krishna fully, full time. And then even there's husband and wife are together, but if they're fully focused on serving Krishna, then their life is perfect in all respects. But again, these points should be very seriously considered. How money that acts in such a way, there's something about it, even though the traditional term is Kanaka Kami. Kanak means gold. So Kali, the personality of Kali, of disruption, of sin, has entered gold. And money, after all, gold is just some metal. There's nothing specifically, I mean, it looks fairly nice, I guess, but not that nice, but there's something about it. Unless one is very spiritually advanced, if one comes into, just like you get a gold necklace, there's something about it which it acts to pollute the mind. Anything valuable like that, or money, it's just, you see money, paper, just paper with 100 written on it or whatever. And you get, say there's a suitcase, you're given a suitcase full of money, or the prospect of winning $1 million in a lottery. There's something about that acts to incite material desire within the mind. I think we've all experienced, we may all have experience of this, how Maya enters that. And we've seen many times, I mean, I've seen that on traveling Sankirtan parties, money is coming in, devotees are selling books, and it happens sometimes that a member of the party just runs off with all the money. He's there, been serving Krishna day in, day out, and somehow, just the thought, maybe some Maya enters in his mind, and just he gone with the money. Why should he? He has the life, he has the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the life of Krishna consciousness. A little money, the idea that I can take this and enjoy. So it's very dangerous. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada actually said that all income in the temple should be banked daily. Why is that? Banked Well, there may be various reasons for that, but one reason is that it's a risk, even for those who have dedicated their life to Krishna, then Maya is working more to pull them down. Generally, everyone is in Maya, avaranatmika. That means everyone, the potency of Maya by which everyone is covered. And they're not thinking of Krishna, they're just thinking of how to enjoy in this material world. But if someone tries to come out of Maya, then Maya has another phase, prakshepatmika, that is meant for kicking you back. So Maya works harder. If we work to become free from Maya, Maya, she works harder on us. So we should know then what we're up against, what are the obstacles, this material attachment, how it manifests. Manifests through attachment to women and wealth. So what's the solution? Use everything for Krishna. And don't keep money. At least a grihastha should keep something. But for renunciants, they shouldn't keep money. Money comes, spend it. For Krishna. Don't keep it. That can be used for serving Krishna. Use it to serve Krishna. You're meant to serve Krishna. You're not meant for becoming a millionaire. You're meant for that. Or everything is meant for Krishna. You may think, well, I'm keeping for this service or that service, but be careful. Because Maya is residing in that. So these points should be considered very carefully by everyone. But with all the money, that should be used for serving Madhava. There's this nice song by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in which he discusses that kanak, that is not bhogir janak, is not meant for generating material enjoyment, but that's all meant for serving Madhava. Madhava means the husband of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, who bestows money. So if money comes, we know this is Krishna's, that should be used only for Krishna. Don't take it, it's not mine. As soon as we think this is my money, my wife even. Of course, we have to think in that way to some extent. One has to take responsibility. But if one has an inherent sense that it is mine, then that is wrong, because we are servants of Krishna. So mine in the sense of, yes, this is given, now it's my responsibility to use this properly in Krishna's service, not for any other purpose. So there are many such statements throughout the Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam is all Krishna. It's not that only the parts of Krishna Leela is Krishna, but every part of Bhagavatam is Krishna. There are so many important lessons we have to learn. So it may be asked, well, why do I particularly say all these things? Why don't I speak so many leelas? Well, maybe if everyone were speaking these things, I would. But just I'm trying to keep a little balance here, that we should discuss these points. Vaishnav grihasthas, they should not be like materialistic people and desiring to get more and more money for their own enjoyment, to be prestigious in human society. They may earn money and, yes, give it to Krishna. Use for your family. Give to Krishna. Don't be enamored by this materialistic society and think that one is better because one has more money. That's the whole idea is there, isn't it? The whole modern world, the capitalistic society, works on this idea that if you have more money, then you're better than others. But that's not true. That's not true. This way of thinking is completely antithetical to bhakti. But we're surrounded by people who think like that. One reason the Indian community or Indian people in America are well respected is because they earn well. Not because they chant Hare Krishna, some of them. That's not the reason. But because they earn. That's America means it's built on money consciousness. This country is built on money consciousness. It started off with an idea of God consciousness, but it's become converted into money consciousness. So devotees have to live in this society. Well, that's again, we don't have to. That's another point. I was just discussing that with you yesterday. We don't have to live in this society. Srila Prabhupada, he put so much emphasis on varnashram communities. The Srila Prabhupada's revolutionary idea. How can we get free from attachment to money? Don't have money. Well, how can you live without money? What? Well, you don't need money. You can't eat dollar bills. Right? You can't eat dollar bills. I mean, you could do, but cows probably could, but it's not recommended for humans. Roti, kapra, makan. These three things. Food, clothing, shelter. Where does that all come from? From, we need money. No, everything comes from the land. Right? Food comes from the land. Clothing, well, they make it from oil nowadays. But, well, that also comes from under the earth. Otherwise, cotton, jute, wool, flax, leather can also be used. Vaishnavas don't generally, at least Vaishnava brahmanas don't use it, but leather also for shoes, that may also be there. Not from slaughtered animals. So that all comes from the land. And housing, traditionally, housing is made whichever area you live in from local materials, either mud house or brick made from local materials, or stone or wood. In some places, igloos, but we're not going to go and live made from snow. But really, that's a very low birth, and you have to eat fish. So we're not going to go. I mean, someone has to preach in the Arctic Circle also, but even then. But anyway, the point is, locally, Krishna provides. So everything comes from the land. And there are still people in the world today who don't use money. Believe it or not. Uncle Sam's looking for them. He's got them on his Google map. He's got to get to them and civilize them and save them from poverty. See, they don't have any money. They're living in poverty. You see?
Bhagavad says sarva kama dughamahi.
Yeah, sarva kama dughamahi. Exactly. Yeah. Prabhupada often quoted that.
Yes.
All needs come from the land. So the humanitarian societies are looking for people who are in poverty, but they're not in poverty. They're just not. They don't have McDonald's and Coca-Cola, so they don't have education, university education. You have to help them, rascal them. This Tejas Prabhu, he often quotes. You must know that. He says, the war on poverty, which, who is that declared the war on poverty? Was it Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, someone? Mm-hmm. Was it Bill Clinton? He said, it's the war on simple living. When I first came to Prabhupada Village, I was suggesting that, well, if you're building your house, why don't you, either you could be really radical and not have any toilet at all and just go in the field, or you could do what they used to do, which is to have an outhouse. You know the word outhouse used to mean toilet because you'd have it outside. Then I was told that, well, it's illegal. You have to have an attached toilet in your house by law, because they don't want North Carolina to maintain its reputation of being the poverty-stricken state. So, like that in India now, they've got a big campaign. Every house should have a toilet. I don't know what they're going to do in Bombay, where there's no space at all. Every house should have, for generations, people have been going in the field. But now they have to have toilet, which means running water and sewage pipes and all this kind of thing. As soon as they put the sewage pipes in Vrindavan, it became a complete disaster. You know why the whole town stinks? Because they put in sewage pipes, which don't work. In Puri, they put in sewage pipes, and they never thought that there's so much sand that they just clog up with sand all the time. It's stupid, sorry. In the name of progress. So anyway, what are we talking about? Sewage pipes here. Anyway, chant Hare Krishna and live simply, and then you won't need money. How can we live without electricity? Well, it's just like nowadays people can't think about living without cell phones, but believe it or not, 15 years ago, hardly anyone had a cell phone. 20 years ago, I think, no one had a cell phone. Life went on without cell phones. And believe it or not, there are still many people in the world who don't have electricity. And you can live without it. It's terrible, horrible. But Prabhupada was recommending it right here in America. And some devotees at least did used to live like that on Prabhupada's order. As soon as you get electricity, you have to pay the electricity bill, or you can put in solar panels, but then as soon as you have electricity, then comes the TV, and then bhakti is finished. Or your computer games, internet. I also use a computer. I'm also an offender, but I do use it for writing books. And I don't use it for computer games or for uselessly browsing the internet. So keep focused. Okay, I'm rambling off here and there, so on the subject of writing books, maybe we'll talk about those books. Any question, first of all? Question, comment, protest? No one, you're all very pious and polite, and no one ran out screaming. Yeah, there's a question coming from over there. All right, you have need a little time to formulate your question. Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to ask a question concerning what we discussed yesterday at the Hindu Center.
Yes, please.
And Saradipa, would you know, we discussed a little bit, but I'm still not following it, is that time and time we hear this story that some kid is, someone can recite their previous life. And Saradipa probably told me about this kid, this boy who was born in Scotland, and he's talking about his previous life.
Just one thing. Please, for the sake of my recording, speak. Speak a little louder
Okay.
Don't speak to me, speak to Sivaranga Prasad standing up there. Speak to him.
Great, yeah. Hare Krishna Gaurang Prabhuji. My question is regarding some birth where you hear this story that these people will recite their previous life in great details, And I was doing a little bit of research on this boy who was born in Scotland, and he's talking about his previous life in some off of Scotland, some island there, and he was giving a lot of details about his life, where he was born, the house, everything, with great details, and a lot of scientists got, you know, very interested about this boy, and they went there to this place and they found these details were true. So my question to you is, why certain soul can recite such great detail and not others? What's going on? If you could shed some light on that, we'll really appreciate that.
Well, to tell you the truth, I never thought about it. In general, we could say, sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto matasmriti jnanam apohanam cha. Krishna gives knowledge and remembrance to everyone. So if some people can remember their previous life, and generally those who do remember their previous life is generally children, and the memory fades as they grow older, so we're told, then Krishna must have some purpose for them to do so. Generally that knowledge is withheld because one comes to this material world with the idea of enjoying it. And if you remember how I suffered, and I died and I got born again, then the identification with the body by which one wants to enjoy this world becomes disjointed. But Krishna may give that memory to some for some particular purpose. It seems that in many cases, people who can remember, it's people who had sudden or violent deaths in many cases, which means that it seems that they never, even though they entered another body, the cutoff from the other body didn't, it was so sudden that they didn't leave it. Attachment to that. I never thought about that. It's a very interesting question, actually. But I cannot, maybe if I think about it more, Krishna may give me some knowledge. That often happens, and then I could answer that more fully. But just I could say that whatever we know and whatever we can remember is, due to our past life, Krishna reveals. In other words, if I know something, if I have the ability to amass knowledge, that's Krishna gives that ability due to our past life. That if we're very pious in a previous life, we may be very intelligent in this life. So knowledge of a previous life, Krishna has some purpose in revealing that. We also see that some people are born genii. Is that the plural of genius? Geniuses? Genii, is it? Yeah. In some particular field, like Mozart was very famous, that from childhood he was just brilliant at music. So that is understood to be from previous life. Srila Prabhupada said about John Lennon and George Harrison that he was a Gandharva in his previous life. So that we can understand. That's a somewhat related topic. Anyone else has any other thoughts on that? Why some people remember their previous life and others don't?
During the book distribution, somebody asked me this question. And I said, it is good we don't have that. Otherwise, the life in this world will become very miserable. If I remember somebody cheated me previously and I see that person, probably I'm going to go and catch one of them.
Yeah.
So, it can become so
lovely calamity for sure, yeah. But I was my question was in context of why this particular soul was able to remember everything, and kind of touched base on that when
there was
violent death, that the transmigration may have some glitch.
The story that you're referring to, also the boy has a deep emotion. His mother thought the boy was going crazy. Have to bring him to this island, Bara.
Exactly.
To find out what's going on. Why is he so upset? Why is he crying? There's some deep emotional occurrence in his life. He's trying to sort it out. He went there afterwards, as you were saying.
The kind of details he gave was absolutely true.
Also, one more thing there are many cases like that. That Ian Stevenson, that one researcher, he documented many such cases.
Yeah, this guy, there's a scientist, right, Dr. Tucker in Virginia, and he's documenting such cases.
Again, the thing is that even Stevenson he gave his whole life to this, and he documented many, many cases in a very scientific way. Not in a popularistic style, in a very, but still the scientific orthodoxy don't accept it. So, what can you do if people are deliberately refusing to accept? They don't accept it because they don't want to. Not scientifically, you could say Ian Stevenson has scientifically demonstrated the reality of the phenomenon of reincarnation. But the scientific orthodoxy, they don't even want to think about it, touch it, discuss it, because they don't want to. That means they're not scientific at all. They're biased. But if there can be more propaganda made about this, and then gradually people will accept. And many people in America, which one generation ago wasn't like that, but many people in America accept, at least theoretically, that reincarnation is a real, it's phenomenon. So, but they don't know what it is or how it works. Bhakti Charu Swami told me some years ago that he was called to a conference on reincarnation in Switzerland, and I believe he said Dalai Lama was there also, or some big shot Buddhists. He said none of them had anything to say. They didn't know anything. He said they don't know how it works. They only have a very vague idea. Hindus also, mostly, they don't have a very clear idea. There's a general idea, but not a very clear idea. Because you'll find in the Puranas, there are so many, throughout Shastra, there's so many stories. In the next life, so-and-so was someone in a previous life, and they get their whole, what is it, Katha, Sagarita, Sara. That's hundreds of stories of people, how they go from one life to the next. And so that general understanding is there. It's generally understood if you do some pious activities, you get a good result, and sinful activities, you get a bad result. But how it works, I mean, there's a whole psychology. Anyone wants to do research and write a book about how everything you do and see and hear and even think about creates a sanskara in the mind, that those impressions, an impression, sanskara literally means impression, then that becomes that enters very deeply within the consciousness. You may not even know or remember it. Then you have a whole stockpile of vasana or general desire, and then just suddenly, like a bubble coming up from the bottom of a lake, that gas might have been trapped at the bottom for hundreds of years. If you see a bubble, just suddenly comes up. Or by contact with Kanaka Kamini, by coming in contact with the objects of desire, as happened with the Jamil, he was a pure Brahmana boy, but by contact, by seeing the low-class people embracing, the desire which was deep in his heart came out, became ignited, and he fell down from that. So you could write and then by indulgence in that, then again he became entangled. So that could be a whole study. Suhodra Swami wrote a book, Vedanta Psychology. I would like to have proposed to him to make it. It seemed to be mostly for devotees, but if it could be very simply written, he had very good knowledge of mundane psychology. He had very good knowledge of so many things. So If a book was systematically given, Bhagavad Gita is a great book on psychology. All you need to know is right there in Bhagavad Gita. That is, basically we have that. Dhyato vishaya pungsang sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho vijayate krodho bhavati sammohat sammohat smriti vibramaha smriti bhangshad buddhinasho buddhinashad praneshad. Great, great stuff, psychology. Then what is that? Shrotram shakshu sparsham cha rasanam granam eva cha tishtaya manas chaiva vishayanu anusevate. Yeah, so all these great stuff. And how psychology, how the mind works, how we go from body to body, everything there. Vimurhananu pashanti pashanti jnana chakshus. We can see all this by the knowledge, with the eye of knowledge that Krishna gives. So we talk about knowledge empowering, but really, well, then the best knowledge is Krishna's knowledge, and that gives us the power to resist Maya. Otherwise, the so-called power that you get is just power to be manipulated by Maya. That's not power at all. It means that in the game that Maya is playing us with, we become a big puppet. That's all. I'm powerful. You become a big puppet. But the real power is the power. The most powerful person is not one who has so much wealth and prestige, properties, but someone who can see all that and say, no. Who has the opportunity, no, no interest in all of that. That's why the Kshatriya, the king, they'll go and bow down to the Brahmana who's nothing. And knows that the Brahmana is more powerful than me. There's no attraction to any of this. That he is controlling means he's controlled. He thinks that the Kshatriya thinks he's, the rich man thinks I'm controlling means he's controlled. And the Sadhu, he's aloof from all of that, not controlled. He's aloof. And Rajarshi means he has all these things, he's controlling on behalf of Krishna. Therefore he can just give it up immediately. Parikshit, Bharat Maharaj, immediately. When the time comes, on the spot, leave it. Because they never had a, how can they do that? They never had any attachment. So that's real wealth, so real power. So yeah, so many books need to be written. This books describing, we can give this psychology courses. People have, in Russia, people are so interested in psychology for some reason. But unfortunately, our devotees, they get mixed up with all mundane psychology. We have everything there in Bhagavad Gita. And Bhagavatam. So, Jarabharat, all this. So, you were going to ask a question. In today's world, there are many philanthropists. They're mostly all cheaters. Their so-called philanthropy is for cheating people. Just like Bill Gates has this foundation in Africa for improving the food production. He has massive shares in Monsanto. So his improving the food production means to cheat people by giving them all this Monsanto foods, which actually drives genetically modified foods, which who knows what it's doing to them, and it's spoils all the land and everything. So beware of the philanthropists. They're the most evil, yeah, big advocate of abortion and all this kind of thing. Schools, hospitals, providing food. Yeah. They don't say they're going back to Godhead. They have no interest.
That's how they will liberate themselves.
Who says that they'll liberate? They're not there. Who says that? Bill Gates doesn't talk about liberation. They call themselves a karma yogi. Bring them to Krishna consciousness is very difficult because they're intoxicated by their so-called helping people. But at least you can save others. If you tell them that that as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, that the neophyte devotees ringing the bell in the temple during Krishna's arati, even once, is far more beneficial both materially and spiritually than the mundane peoples opening millions of hospitals and schools, they're not likely to accept that. Because it's another kind of intoxication. I'm helping people. What can you do to help them? I once had a very interesting conversation with a philanthropist in Hubli, in Karnataka. So he was at home, he was worshipping Narayana. So he started telling me how I'm helping so many people with making STD booths for, and that was the days of STD booths before. They were just coming up. Making STD booths, I mean telephone booths what's that called? Vikalanga? Spastics. You're not supposed to call them. They're called handicapped people. Physically challenged. Now, there's probably some other term now. Differently enabled, I think they're called. Disabled. They're always thinking. Now they're called differently abled. That's the latest euphemism. When I was a kid, they were called.
Abortion
has
removed the
tissue. Yeah. Tissue removal. So I said, well, yeah, I was very proud about it. You know, I'm helping so many people. And so I got into the same telling that, well, you know, however much you may help them, they still have to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. And he was polite, but he gradually got less and less polite. And I'm not always so polite also. So eventually he just shouted at me, Narayana, he's also Daridra. We weren't talking about Narayana, but he was worshipping Narayana at home, but his envy of Narayana, I was just talking about getting free from birth, death, old age, and just his envy just burst out of him. We weren't discussing Narayana at all. I'm rich, I'm helping people, and Narayana is Daridra, poverty stricken. Although he's worshipping Narayana at home, completely envious. So these people who claim to help others, who make a big thing out of it, we should be very careful, because in many cases, they're very much in the mood that, Ishvaroham, I am Suhrit, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. I am helping others. See, He didn't help them. He made them like that. I'm helping them. This is their mentality. So we should be very careful. And many times these philanthropists, they have some other scheme also. It's actually some way to increase their own bank balance or to make them look good in the eye. Just like you'll find in many cases that they make their money by exploiting people like anything. And then they do some charity to make them look good, make themselves look good. They're very eager to do charity for it makes them look good, yeah. Like Microsoft, they earn billions and billions of dollars, and they what do they call that? Corporate responsibility. And they spend, maybe 20 million or 100 million a year on some kind of charity, which doesn't really help anyone anyway. But that's to make them look good. Corporate responsibility, as they're making billions and billions of dollars, making more and more useless operating systems and making a headache because they have to make more money. So they're making operating systems. Everyone hates them because you have to change and they're not better than the other ones. Anyway. Linux keys. We should all go over to Linux and put all these people out of business. Why don't we all do that? Hmm? You have. It's you have to learn it, right? Oh, yeah, that's the thing.
So in that case, shall we donate money for charities which are unknown, or we should not? For example,
donate charity for spreading Krishna consciousness. That is the best charity. That will definitely benefit people. Helping people on the bodily platform is only on the bodily platform. If you really want to do the best thing you can, then you want to be really sure that the money won't get misused or misspent, then you get crates of Prabhupada's books and distribute them. Because there's, even sometimes we give to ISKCON and we're not sure what happens, to be quite frank. And not always, and I'm not saying don't give to ISKCON. But if you're doubtful at all, and you want to be really sure, you can take books and distribute them. Or you find some ISKCON project which is we are fully sure of. There are good projects. In fact, I could tell you some I'm involved in too, if you're interested. But be careful also, because sometimes devotees, they do become disappointed. That may happen also. And some, you could say misspending is inevitable when there's lots of money floating around. But, you see, there are many projects, but spreading Krishna consciousness, that is the need. That is the real need. Yeah, you're looking at your watch, what time is it? Yeah, okay, so we finish then.
Do we get a karmic reaction if we donate money? And say somebody else will give that money and spend money on some bad things?
If you give money for Krishna consciousness in all good faith and someone misappropriates it for their sense gratification, they go to hell, you don't. It's not your. In all sincerity, if you give it for the cause of Krishna, you are not the loser. That's why I see in India people, they go on giving to temples, even they may know that all the money is not being used properly, but just like Balaji, the money, so many temples, the money is taken by the government and used for opening fish farms and all kinds of things. Well, actually, in such cases, I say better give it to the priests. They may not be also fully pure, but they're not as bad as the government people. So, if you better give it to the priests. Or better give Prabhupada's books to the priests. In fact, I had a very good experience the only time I went to Somnath. That we wanted to give some monetary contribution to the priest there. They said, do you have Prabhupada's books? Can you give us that instead? We want Bhagavad Gita as it is. That was very good. And then, many things like that. some devotees, they wanted to give me so many Bhagavad Gitas as it is. Bhagavad Gitas as it is. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Whatever. I kept that for free distribution. So regularly when I'm in India, I visit various temples, Vaishnav temples, Shaiva temples, whatever. So give to the priests, and they often appreciate it. Generally they appreciate it. So that's good also. You can give books to the... who likes books to distribute very much, and is very good use is the ISKCON prison ministry. You can ask them. They can take lots of books. That's a very good use. Here in America. For the prisoners, yeah. Because they can't buy the books, so they really, and they often very much appreciate them more than others, and they have time to read it. Like many people don't have time to read. So, Hare Krishna!
Hare Krishna!
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.